Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Brianna Kurtz, host of Eat Your Words. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Lady Sue. And what do I do when I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? Out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brands, startups, all those doing what's most innovative and delicious. I recently headed out to San Francisco in the Bay Area to talk to food folks out here for our SF sessions, not live, but on location. So on today's Word of Mouth, we're recording on April 29th from the studios of our partner company, Stitcher. Stitcher is a handy app that you can use to listen to your favorite radio shows on demand and on the go. And we're here with chef owner Michael Tusk of the two Michelin-starred Quince and its sister restaurant, Catonia. And in 2011, Michael was honored with the James Beard Award for Best Chef Pacific. Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Very good.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time.
It's my pleasure.
So, we just bopped on over here in your brand new car.
That we did.
That is the most newsworthy thing, truly.
Well, it was fun having you as my first, guest in the car.
It did smell really new. It
smelled a lot better than my car that I normally drive.
Yeah, I'm. Congrats on the new car.
Thank
what
you.
What do you normally drive?
Well, we've got a Ford Transit for the restaurant that unfortunately became my prime time vehicle just because of all the markets that we go to. And we pick up, animals and lambs and go out to ranches and visit different farms. So it's a great vehicle for that. And all the chefs at the restaurant use it to head out to the marketplace. But they were using it more and more, so I decided to move on and pass it on to them.
Right. Like so. Our friend Johnny Black, which we'll do a shout out. I was so happy to see that Johnny cooked at Governor before Governor was smushed in the big hurricane, and he was an orphan chef.
And then, he was.
And Michael picked him up, and now he's your CDC.
He is. It was a great. It was a very sad story about the restaurant, and I think everybody in the restaurant business knew about it or heard about it.
Absolutely.
And Johnny was from the Bay Area originally, and an easy hire. He's super talented, and it's nice having him run the kitchen for me. And then I got a bonus of his fiance Monique, who's in the front of the house, and she's a captain at the restaurant. So you can't pass up the 2-for-1 deals.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That was just too convenient. And also, can't pass up, being in business with your life partner, right, with your wife, Lindsay.
That is true.
How did you and Lindsay first meet?
She was studying at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the Bay Area, just had returned from doing some stages in France. I was in the Bay Area, and I ended up getting a job at a restaurant, and she was at the restaurant just kind of working her way through school, and we met there, and then basically working together for a short period of time before, I said one of us should probably go and the other one should run this restaurant, but then I had a feeling at that point that maybe we would work together in the future. And I didn't know if it was going to be a restaurant or not, since I didn't really want to. She had other interests and could have done whatever she really wanted to.
Yeah, what was she studying?
She was studying third world development at Berkeley. And then she was thinking about maybe going to graduate school. And then she also did a lot of work with, you know, some breast cancer action and some other women's organizations. And so, you know, I didn't really expect to now be working with her for, you know, 11 years every day. But no, it becomes more and more natural to, you know, work with your wife and, you know, you have disagreements here and there. But for the most part, it doesn't, you don't even think about it any longer. It's like what we've done for so long. That you just wake up and whether we go to work together or, you know, go home at the end of the night together, it's not, it's very easy. And, you know, I see a lot of friends that have either opened up restaurants with their wives or husbands, and it's not a, I'd rather, it's such a hard business to begin with to work as much as we do that, you know, it would be very hard to, you know, have a partner that's, in a completely different field with different hours. So it's, no, it's easy. It's, every year that goes on, it's easier and easier. And then, I don't even, you know, when people ask me that question, I don't even think about it. It's, it just becomes so natural that this is what we do.
What's the division of labor?
Well, I run the kitchens and I'm just basically, in, you know, obviously writing the menus and cooking and running the food. And, you know, she did more of the service, the earlier stages of, the restaurant's development. And then, you know, she's, she does that also, but she's more involved with, the development of the business. And if we're going to do something in the future, and then she's, you know, on the floor also, working with the staff. But, you know, 11 years is a pretty good amount of time. So both of our you know, jobs have changed a little bit over the course of time.
And congrats on the nomination this year for Best Service, James Beard.
Thank you. Well, I wish I could take credit for that, but that's definitely, you know, the managers at the restaurant and Lindsay and, you know, the work that she did in the past working with the different staff members and all the young staff that we have at the restaurant. And so, no, it's great. It's a great for the entire restaurant, and it's a concerted team effort from you know, it has been from day one. So we're very proud to work with the entire group in the front of the house. And you know, we just, from the kitchen standpoint, try to make their job as easy as possible by, you know, doing what we do. And, but, you know, it's great. And I can't pass up going to New York for a couple of days. So very excited.
Yes, I will provide you my list.
Thank you. I'll give you the list for out here.
Yay. And so, but you say it's easy now. There's got to be something we can learn from you and Lindsay about, one, the picking of partners, both personal and professional, and two, maintaining that partnership over so many years. I mean, it's not always been easy.
Oh, no, it's, you know, I think anybody who goes into the restaurant business and opens up their own business, it's, you just have to fight through some adversity. And it's, you know, when we opened, it was kind of a somewhat downtime in the Bay Area. There wasn't a lot of restaurants that were opening up. And we just...
hard to believe now.
Oh, it's... now it's every, you know, number of months there's, you know, new restaurants opening up of, you know, all sorts of different styles of cuisine. And
I was just at the Dirty Habit Friends and Family yesterday night.
Excellent. How was that?
Delicious.
Well, yeah, I did. Unfortunately, being at the restaurant a lot, I don't really, I'm a little bit behind the times and in San Francisco, but then when I get to travel for different events, whether it's, you know, a lot of the events that you're asked to do are for, you know, different charities, and which is great. And I love supporting them. And then, so it's great to get to, you know, cities like, you know, I was just in Charleston. That's an amazing city. Love going there. You know, whether you're in New York, I was in Carmel for another event that I did. And then, so it's always wonderful to get to see all the new restaurants around the country, since they're all the different, you know, cities have great food these days, and, you know, great chefs, and they all have a different outlook on what they do every day and what they are providing for their communities. And so it's great for me to get out. But unfortunately, in San Francisco, most of the time that I'm here, I don't get out as often as I would like. So
favorite spot in New York the last time you were out there?
The last time I was in New York, I was able to go to Aska and I don't know what part of Brooklyn that was since I'm
Williamsburg.
Not, Williamsburg.
It's a block away from where I live.
Excellent. So I went to Williamsburg and you know, just had an amazing meal there, like from start to finish. The staff was super inspired. The wine service was amazing. The food was great. I had a great meal, and I'd always wanted to go, and I was supposed to go about 6 months earlier with some friends of mine that are from New York, and they invited me, but unfortunately something came up, and I had to leave New York to go back to San Francisco, so I had to cancel the reservation. So this time I was determined to make it back in, and now I just had a fabulous time. It's one of those you can always tell when you have a great kind of meal. You remember a lot, you know, whether it's the next week, the next day, 6 months later, a year later. I think a lot of chefs, they can, you know, recite what they had, like, you know, at certain meals in their career, whether they're traveling abroad or they're in the United States. And it's great. Some of those meals you just never kind of, you remember what you had from start to finish. And that's always like the sign that I had, you know, a really great experience. And
it's easy to remember when you give a shit. And that's what I realized when I went into the food world is that, wow, it's like, this is so natural because I'll remember all the details about people's stories, about the food that I'm eating. It's like, it's wonderful.
No, it's a real, when you have those moments, when they're natural like that, like you said, it's great to see, especially when it's a tight-knit crew that seems to have really bought into, you know, the chef's vision of, you know, the food, the service, the style of everything, of the entire meal from start to finish. And it was very, very understated and delicious. And
what was it about Frederick Berzelius's food that was impressive to you? And I ask this just because he's got such a unique style.
Well, you know, having never been to, like, you know, I've my last couple trips abroad, you know, I spend more time in, say, France and Italy, and I haven't been to, like, Copenhagen or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was just all very, everything had a little bit of a surprise, and it was all very light and the whole meal had a really kind of nice kind of flow to it. All the compositions were, you know, felt very natural, felt, you know, I just felt at home if I could have eaten, you know, dishes like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I could have gone back the next day, I always know restaurants when I like them, that if I can go the next day, if I'm still, say, in Williamsburg, I probably would have gone back again. And
right.
I did something like that recently when a couple years ago I was in Turin. And then after the event that I was at finished up, I had always wanted to, you know, I had staged in Piemonte years ago, and but a lot had changed, and there was a lot of newer restaurants, and I had never made it to Piazza Duomo in Alba,
mm-hmm.
So I couldn't get in, and I kept on kind of calling, trying to get in, and finally, like about 45 minutes before, I was going to head out to another restaurant, which was also, I had been to the day before, and I had such a good time that, you know, I thought I would just go back there, and then as I'm walking out the door, somebody from the restaurant called and said, you know, if you're here in 45 minutes, you know, we just had a deuce cancel. So got in the car,
mm-hmm.
you know, drove around the winding roads of Piemonte and made it to Alba. And then, I had such a great meal there that, you know, something like, I felt like, you know, well, if I had this menu, I should go back the next day and try the other menu because I wanted to taste as many dishes as I could because it was very, it just was a really great, great lunch and it was relaxing and everything about it was the same. Like I described at Aska, that the staff was really on point. It was a small restaurant, only like, I think maybe 20 seats or so. And, you know, I had such a great time that I said I was supposed to leave the next day. But my flight was, I think, at like 6 a.m. in the morning, and I had to drive through like the fog in Piemonte to get to the airport. And I just said, you know, maybe we can stay an extra day. We can go back to the restaurant. So it was the same ordeal. Wow. Like, we don't have any openings, but we'll call you back. And then once again, and in order to do that, I think my wife never actually told me how much it was to cancel the plane flight to attempt to go back again.
Really?
Which, was a little bit more than I've ever canceled a plane flight before. But she canceled the flight, and then same thing happened. Somebody else canceled.
Wow.
Got back in the car, went to the restaurant again, tried another one of their menus. And by then, it's always fun when a staff sees guests coming in that were there the day before. They can tell how much you really enjoyed the experience. So they made us feel very at home. We had two different menus again.
Oh my gosh.
And it was great because I kept on saying, like, these guys have to get like 3 stars, and they told us that Michelin in Italy was the next week, but and sure enough, like, we got back to the Bay Area, and then a week later, I turned on my computer and I saw the Italian Michelin came out, and sure enough, they had gotten their 3rd star. So I felt like, it was just great. Great.
You discovered
for them.
The rock band before the Michelin, confirmation came out.
Yeah, it was great. No, it was, it was just great when you get to, you knew they were on the cusp of something really amazing. And it was a combination of, like, you felt like you're in Piemonte. It was great technique. They have a farm. Michelle was telling me not
What's
far.
What's this place called?
Piazza Duomo.
Okay.
In Alba. Mm-hmm. And everything about it was was super inspirational. And you kind of you have those experiences. And as somebody that's in the same business, it's great to see. And it's that when you're in Italy and you make this drive and you come to the town of whether it's Alba or another city, and you just have a really, like, an amazing meal, and very, very relaxing too. You look over the center of the town, and the truffle fair was going on too, so I was able to then walk out after the meal, kind of relax a little bit, buy some, I think I was leaving the next day, so I couldn't really buy any truffles, but it was I collect, like, truffle paraphernalia, so I have of 20 some odd truffle slicers, from newer ones to vintage ones, and I have a habit of collecting a lot of, like, different
cool
culinary items, and truffle slicers became part of the repertoire.
Oh, wow.
Years ago, so I'm always, like, each time I go to Piemonte, I try to maybe kind of come back with a new slicer, and
those are up at the restaurant.
Oh yes,
and so your team gets to play with them.
They do, unfortunately. No real troubles around right now.
I appreciate this nerdiness and follow through. So a formative experience in your life was cooking at Chez Panisse with Alice Waters.
Correct.
How did you find your way there?
That's actually a pretty good story.
Uh-huh.
So I made it to the Bay Area, and I think sent some resumes out. I think I took the first job that I was offered, and that wasn't there. It was at a restaurant called Stars when it was open in San Francisco with Jeremiah Tower, and I think I jumped at the chance to grab that $7 an hour job, and very bustling restaurant at that time in the city, just really, really, really busy. Great clientele. You'd see people from all stratas of the city, it was a great first job. But I had a kind of a kitchen accident where I was dropping something off at a dish station,
mm-hmm.
kind of tore up my knee, and then had to get my knee, have a surgery, do rehab, and was having a problem just kind of getting back on my feet. And then I just decided at that point it was, I knew somebody that knew somebody else that I said, hey, I was always interested since I think I saw the first, like, Chez Panisse cooking book and it had this like log, and I don't remember what page, but where it spelled out like everything to do with what was around per season. And there was a list in the first book that they put out where, you know, it would say, you know, exactly what date the first week of mulberries were compared to, you know, and everything seasonal. And I just had always, and I had a lunch there where I think David Tanis was the chef at the time, and I had a really great lunch, and I was like, just tasted something different that I hadn't really, you know, tasted the vitality of the food. And I really liked that. So it was a natural progression that mm-hmm. I would try to get a job there, since, you know, I was just very enamored with where things came from and how they sourced products. So I got the job there, and then, you know, I was there for like a little over 4 years or so. And then that's when I went to leave to go to France. And then when I returned, that's when I met my future wife, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How did you first start cooking?
Well, I had some family, like cousins in New York mm-hmm. that had a catering company. So when I was in, you know, ninth grade or so, I would go into Manhattan and I would hang out occasionally at their store and like, you know, julienne bell peppers with the prep crew.
How old were you?
I don't know, maybe 14 or 13, 14 or so. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I was always, I think as a, in order to be a chef, you really have to love food. So from an early age, I liked.
You don't think?
Well, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's, you know, like I think some people get into the business for some other reasons. And, mm-hmm. and then, you know, but for me, it was always like, I love to taste different foods, and I was never shy about trying, you know, anything. Like you said, here's a snail, and I was like,
cool.
eight or 10 years old, I would eat the snail, and if I liked it, I would ask for some more. Or frog's legs. There was a bar restaurant, and they had a bar when I was growing up in New Jersey, and my family used to take me to
New Jersey.
Yep, Garden State. So I would go to, we'd always meet our family friends in the bar area, and they had these chafing dishes that were set up, and they always had crispy fried frog's legs. So from, you know, an early age, I wasn't allowed to drink at the bar at that time, but I was able to go into the bar and eat the frog's legs. And then anytime the family was going out for dinner, I wanted to go to this place because I liked, you know, the frog's legs so much. So
when, how old were you then?
Oh, that was like seven or eight or whatever.
Wow. You're like way ahead of the curve.
You know, I just, it was, just things like I never would forget. There's, if you remember, since, you're in the original Il Molino,
mm-hmm.
I guess, and that's in the West Village, we used to go there for family gatherings with family friends of ours. And if there was like somebody who was graduating from school or it's an anniversary, we'd always would meet there. And I always remembered that when you walked down the stairs, there was this giant chunk of Parmigiano Reggiano, and there was like zucchini and like marinated and it would always be there. So it was those little things that my family always knew that I was, they thought I was a little off just because of the fact that, you know, I would want to go to these places just because I had a memory for the tastes and which restaurants they were. And, you know, I just always like was always looking for the next, you know, thing to
put in your mouth.
Yeah. It's just delicious. a little different that, you know, so, you know, it was, you know, and growing up and, you know, there was some, back in those days, there was like still some farms around in like suburban New Jersey that had like,
what town of New Jersey?
Well, I was born in Paterson and then I grew up in Glen Rock, and then my family moved further north. And then there was still like, you know, before like, a lot of, development started where, you know, family farms with dairy and, you pick strawberries and we're still available for you to kind of go and pick strawberries and like go to the dairy farm and get a chocolate milk if you're
fun.
You know, 8 or 10 years old. Yep. And you're walking home from school. So, yeah, it was always, that was something that always, stayed with me that I, you know, some of my best memories are you know, around food.
What did your mom and dad do?
My dad was a dentist, mm-hmm. and in New Jersey, and then they moved to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then my mom would, you know, occasionally help him out
yep.
at the office, and then, you know.
So you're ruining our teeth, and he's fixing them. He used to fix them.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was good getting the free dental care at that age. So. But they were very into you know, going out to, you know, restaurants and trying out the. You know,
they were restaurant goers.
Yeah, it was always like the big weekend trip to get outside of, you know, suburbia and head into the bright lights of Manhattan and try out like, you know, the hot. At that time period, it was more, you know, there was that like vanguard of like a lot of French restaurants that were around right. that aren't like around any longer that they would, you know, I'd hear like talks of them going to try out. You know, whether it was like La Côte Basque or some other restaurant. And I was always very, very curious to why I wasn't brought to the restaurant. But, you know, I was only at an age where they weren't going to bring me to those style of restaurants.
Oh, so there was a mystique around like when mom and dad went on a date to like a fancy restaurant.
Pretty much, you know, you're left at home with, you know, so. But, you know,
with some wonder
that was the big disappointment along with. You know, my brother left me at home when he went to the class shows at Bonds back in the day when they did this series of shows.
And, oh, my gosh.
So, you know, I've, you know, gotten over it.
You want to grow up. You wanted to grow up a little bit faster and put on the tie and the jacket. Because back then, dining was much more formal. Was Le Cirque like a thing?
That was a restaurant place, where right. I heard like, you know, that name and I was like, whoa, you know, what is this about? And then, you know, years later I would read like the book that was put out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, knew of the different storied chefs that worked there and so mm-hmm. forth. So it was very, you know, interesting to see, like, if I go back to Manhattan now, those restaurants that are or aren't around and then Danielle and that kind of, you know, and just a very didn't make it in that time period, but I always knew of like some of the dishes. And then
did mom and dad go there?
Not like on a regular basis, but
right, but special
but definitely
occasion.
If it was like an anniversary or something, they might have gone.
I'm a little fascinated because Sara Maccioni just came on Word of Mouth, and that was a really fascinating interview.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that one.
Yeah, he's 82 and still being thoroughly inappropriate. I love it. He gives us all hope. So what are you eating on your days off?
God, that's a good question.
Yeah.
A lot of the times I've just been pretty busy
yep.
recently that I, you know, like I was saying earlier, when I get to travel for whether, you know, like I help out with some of, like we just had a big, share of strength in San Francisco mm-hmm. and, we did that and there was like 50, different chefs that kind of pitched in to raise money for children's, hunger in San Francisco. And then, you know, I'm able to taste some chef's food when they mm-hmm. come to the benefit for that. But, I haven't really, I'd say in the last 6 months gone to, you know, some of the newer places that I'd like to go to.
Well, maybe some simple cooking just at home with Lindsay and,
You know, my kitchen's pretty tiny. It's like kind of like the equivalent of like a Manhattan style studio.
Oh, interesting.
Studios to the rest of the, you know, so I don't really get to cook. I'd love to cook at home,
mm-hmm.
but unfortunately it's not in the cards mm-hmm. right now. But no, I definitely, you know, go out and try to, you know, I went to Aziza a couple months ago and had a great time there. And then like we just bumped into Mark from AQ and I've always wanted to go there, but I haven't like,
yay.
You know, I get the reviews from like the young cooks in the kitchen and like people like Johnny who tell me what's going on. And, you know, I went to Bar Tartine maybe 6 months ago. And I know Courtney,
It's delicious.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, so I wish I was able to maybe head out a little bit more. But, Belinda, who's up for the James Beard Award for pastry.
Mm-hmm.
I live fairly close to her patisserie, Bee Patisserie. So I try to shoot over there whenever I'm coming back from like a market or something and, buy some pastries for the team to have at the restaurant. I'll head to Yang Tsing every now and then for dim sum. And since I can walk there, and that's really, really nice. I went to lunch at Chez Panisse about a week or two ago with somebody to just like kind of get outside the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I had something going on in Berkeley, so I went over there. I went to Comey like maybe 6 or 9 months ago, and that was really great. And I had a great time there. And Manresa was a place that I went to whenever I'm coming, have a free, Cezanne I went to recently too. So maybe I have gone out a little bit more.
Yeah, you're like, I haven't done it. And then you just.
Well, it's like the ones that when you know what it's like to open up a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
I usually try to wait. I went to Pim's restaurant too, which was great. I try to usually wait a significant amount of time just because if you've been through opening up a restaurant, I just like to, I think when we opened up the original restaurant on the first day, we had like,
some chef you really admire in.
Gilbert, who was the original, who was a chef at Chez Panisse at the time, and now he's the owner of Zuni Cafe. And then we had a chef from Masa's at the time. So it's like the first two tickets came in and you're like,
great.
You're like, are they really coming on the first like 15 minutes that you're open? Like half of the lighting wasn't even completed. And we're just like, we have to get open. But I have, fond memories of I wouldn't do that to a friend. But people are pretty fearless these days. They don't really like, you're open. So
And they know. They're not judging.
Yeah, it was fine. I just I usually try to wait like 3 or 6 months and go to a place, and then occasionally I'll end up at a restaurant where I don't like go on a website and check out when they actually open and get to a place earlier than that time. But and it's great too when you have a great meal and you don't even know when they open. They just opened up like 3 weeks ago and you're unaware of it, and it seems like so natural that they've been open for a while. So it's great when you can see that.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
So you've reached a level of success and greatness here in San Francisco and nationwide, and it's just, I'm so happy for you. Was there a point in your career where something happened where, or you realized, hey, if I just keep plugging along, like I could be great, that exciting turning point where you realize that, hey, I've got it going on,
Well, thanks for the compliments. Now I feel like you always have a struggle. If you're a cook, you're trying to figure out how to, become a chef and,
mm-hmm.
and take your first like management job and how to, I think there's always like a next step. Yeah. Fear. Like, am I going to be this age and be doing this or, and you have to have like a plan. Like, I wanted to, be a sous chef by the time I was 20 something, 25 or whatever. And then by the time I wanted to be, fully running a kitchen for somebody at a certain age. And sometimes you hit those little,
milestones.
And then, for me, it was kind of I lucked out and I was able to, I think the turning point was, I always respected like raw products, materia prima, like where things were from.
Yep.
And just from, you know, travel and like when I did work at Chez Panisse, I was able to open up boxes from Chino Ranch, and I came from the airport, and then I was able to check them in for Peggy Smith, who's from the Cowgirl Creamery now, and she was my chef at the time, so she let me do that. And then another chef, Catherine Brandel, who then went on to Greystone before she passed away. You know, she knew the Trois Gros, and, you know, had spent a lot of time in France. So she gave me, like, you know, great Chefs of France books, and different, little culinary inspirations. But I think when I went away for the first time on the first trip to Italy, I went with, Paul Bertoli,
mm-hmm.
and, cause he was like kind of a Renaissance man in terms of, like, you know, whatever he decided to move into in his career, he was really talented in, and he had a very natural way of transitioning into, you know, being a chef and to making vinegar and then salumi and so forth. So, you know, he took me to Modena,
mm-hmm.
and I was in, with, a gentleman who he was buying, he was a cooper. He was making, aceto balsamico barrels. He was also, some barrels had come into, like, I think Mondavi and, a couple other, California winemakers. And this gentleman, Francesco Renzi, from the, Renzi is the name of the, his, barrel, mm-hmm. His business, and it's a family business. He basically just took us around Emilia Romagna for a week. And, you know, if I wasn't, we'd go to, say, somebody was using his barrels for winemaking, we would travel, you know, to taste wine, and check out his barrels. We'd go to a friend who was making balsamico with the barrels. And, we went to a Parmigiano Reggiano, you know, got to see the cheese being made, got to see the cheese way, the pigs, the anything to do with like that area of Italy and that region, you know, he brought us firsthand. The best part was Massimo Spigaroli, the Culatello producer, and we went to have a Culatello tasting with him. And then, like, 2 months ago when I was in Bologna, I took a trip out to Massimo Spigaroli's new Relais property. And then, you know, he was able to show me the Culatello production, the you know, where the pigs were held, the mm-hmm. whole landscape of the town right next to Zibello. And then I had a dinner at the restaurant and tried, like, you know, 8 different ages of Culatello. And so that was an amazing experience. And I had met him, probably like 16 or 18 years ago. And then he came in for a wine tasting at the restaurant, or a wine dinner as a guest of somebody. And I looked at him and he looked at me, and he's like, how do I know you? And I looked at him and I was like, I know this guy. And then I went upstairs. I had his menu from when I went to the restaurant.
Oh my gosh.
And I brought it down because there's a picture of him, and it's owned by his brother and himself. And there's a picture of him on the back of the menu, and the menu is huge because when you open it up, it has the giant cellar that holds the Culatello. And it was the most dramatic menu that I ever had. So I was like, I have to take this back with me. So I brought it down here and I got him to sign it, like, you know, almost, 20 years
wow.
later. And I was able to hang out with him, and he's like, you know, like an amazing artisan, you know, producer of like a tradition that's, you know, been passed down. And, that was great. And he has a Michelin starred restaurant at his new, so he's got 2 restaurants, and, you know, those kind of things led me to, by the time I came back, I thought I had a lot more knowledge about a certain style of mm-hmm. cuisine. And then we had a couple experiences, like if we weren't in Emilia Romagna, but we, you know, went to Florence for the day, and we went to the San Lorenzo market.
Mm-hmm.
There was one particular kind of experience where we had very early in the morning, about like 7 a.m., there was a little tavola calda there that we had some like Chianti and, mm-hmm. and these like sausages basically with fagioli and with beans. And it was at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're drinking red wine and eating
love
sausages.
It.
And then, you know, when we got back, it was like, you know, I was like, I'm going to do something kind of like that, because at that time where I was cooking, I was more rustic. But, you know, we would just be able to have a dialogue like, you know, it had some pork skin, it had this and that, and had it, and then texturally, I would just make it, and I'd be like, what do you think? And he'd be like, that's really spot on. And then I feel like I had enough confidence at that point because, mm-hmm. you know, I got kind of thrust into a position where somebody was running a kitchen and they were no longer in charge, and I got put in charge. And then you it's basically survival of the fittest at that point. And then you're given an opportunity. You have a kitchen to run. And I was able to just like go to any market that I wanted to, you know, butcher every whole animal imaginable. And he was a butcher in the past. So, you know, that was a great skill to learn. And then cut every piece of fish to, you know, make any type of pasta that I tried when I was in on those travels. And then at that point you have this confidence. And then I think that was like a pivotal moment that I came back and I was like, you know, I liked the natural Italian cuisine, the flavor profiles, and but I also liked elegant, you know, French food and the French dining experience and French regional food. So I wanted to kind of combine the two, and I just had a passion for you know, like I kind of veer back and forth, and I like, you know, that just that Mediterranean element of like, you know, France and Italy and like the connection. Like, it was just
to have somebody you admire say, hey, you know what? Like, I trust you, and actually, you know, your dishes are delicious.
He would come in, I'd say, like, you know, I remember having a dish in a restaurant where it was like a basic sfermato or a mold, kind of like flan, unmolded flan, and with nettles. And it was in Artemino at the Da Delfina in there, and we got a tour of the kitchen from the chef. I later was able to meet the chef and when he was in Napa and cook with him a little bit. And, you know, it was like you remember those certain dishes. And then, you know, my whole goal was to come back and like pay homage to that dish, but maybe put a California tweak on it and make it, you know, with a product that I wasn't trying to just make that dish just like we had it, but kind of give it a little twist. And that's always what I wanted to do, is like honor tradition and, you know, pay homage to it and then give it a little bit of Northern California touch by using products that are local and supporting these great bounty of farmers that we have out here. And then suddenly, like, you have a traditional dish that has like a little bit of you know, San Francisco, you know, feel to it, and or West Marin or wherever the product is coming from. So it was very natural at that point that I wanted to cook in that kind of style. And then as the years go on and we have two restaurants, it's, you're able to kind of like, you know, cook in a much more direct way. And then the other restaurant, which was Quinn's, has maybe these days like a little bit more sense of whimsy than when it first opened, and it's more natural and I think lighter, but still has elements of like Italian and French cuisine.
So when you started, when you and Lindsay said, hey, we're going to open a restaurant, that was something it happened around when 9/11 happened, right?
Correct. Well, around 2000, we both left our respective jobs, and we, you know, had this notion that we could maybe open up something that had, you know, both you know, a kitchen kind of garden attached to it that was kind of like a, you know, an inn or something that you'd say like a, you know, a smaller like kind of relay property that you'd see in France and Provence or something like that. And then so we wanted to, you know, get into the innkeeping to a certain extent. And we got offered to come back to California after we had traveled. And I had done some travel before that just to say, you know, we're going to go back to this coast, and maybe, you know, my wife is from Maine, and since we were both from the East Coast, so we looked at, you know, Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont and Connecticut, and tried to find of, you know, Virginia a little bit. And then, you know, I made a trip to the Inn at Little Washington, since I wanted to see like a place that, you know, it was near a city, but, you know, was in the country. And, you know, I had a great meal there. And now it's nice that I've been able to kind of meet Chef Patrick O'Connell becoming a member of Relais Chateau. And I see him at a lot of events, and he's he's a very inspired chef and a great person to know and to have a business that's been open for as long as, you know, the inn has been open, and he's still, you know, changing, and I think he's adding some rooms on, and then I think that's what you have to do in the restaurant business, so you can never get kind of complacent, and you always want to try to, you know, make your business or your restaurant better it has to be interesting to you at that point, whether it's 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And I was able to see that from some chefs that I worked for, like even at like Chez Panisse, they were always fine tuning the physical building, you know, and they were always, you know, so very little, you know, minor items like polishing something, you know, having the handyman Khalil at the time, the gentleman, you know, add something here and there, but it was always done with a great amount of respect for the property, and it still looked, you know, great. Like, I mean, it's an outstanding accomplishment if you can, you know, open up a restaurant and have it open for a couple of years. To open 20, 30, 40, 40 years is pretty staggering, because it's a fairly, you know, tough business to be in. So
what was it about the moment of 9/11 that made it the right time for you two to strike out on your own?
Well, we were supposed to open up a property with a group, and it was based on the Sonoma Coast, and it was going to be have, you know, lodging, and it was a group based out of Vermont, and it was a beautiful, you know, very magical kind of setting on the Sonoma Coast. But I just kind of felt like after 9/11 that that type of travel to that part of the coast was going to be, you know, very, very hard for people to kind of, you know, it was a lot to ask for people to, whether they're flying into, you know, SFO or Sacramento to do the winding. This is, I just came from, say, Big Sur, where I catered my assistant's wedding, and I was driving up and down Highway 1.
And love it.
At a certain point.
It was Leilani?
Yeah, it was Leilani.
Wow.
So I catered her. She got married on Saturday, and I catered her.
I need to assist a chef to have him cater my wedding.
I'll put it down in the calendar.
Yeah, great.
So, no, but it was a very, I had a very interesting experience where, you know, it was about 30 miles south of the Big Sur. And,
So that opportunity wasn't the right thing, but then you're like kind of like.
Well, this kind of reminded me why it's kind of tough when you're out in those fairly isolated properties. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think the clientele was going to really want to, you know, travel was very hard at that time after you know, 9/11 and when I was catering her wedding, I forgot an attachment to my pasta roller. So, like, her wedding was, like, 3 hours. It was early in the afternoon, and I had to get in my car and drive down Highway 1 to try to find a restaurant that had any type of pasta attachment that I could possibly make these zucchini and squash blossom tortelli for her wedding. And it was a very special day, and she's an amazing young lady. So I decided that, you know, I got on the road. I could have just said, you know, we can't do this course. It's like, we're too isolated, but I got on the road and I found, a restaurant, and they were nice enough to, it was probably like 20 miles away back from where I started from in the morning. They were nice enough to let me into the restaurant, and they didn't have a pasta attachment though. So I had to roll the pasta out by hand, and it wasn't the correct kind of dough because it was made in a different kind of style, but I made it happen. And then I got back on the road, and I was driving down winding Highway 1 holding two sheet trays of this pasta. And I made it back and probably about 15 minutes before the actual ceremony. And then, but it all, that's the magic of, like, say, the restaurant business, and not, you know, you go out of your way for whether it's, you know, somebody that works for you or the guests, you try to do as much as possible to have them have, you know, hopefully a great magical experience at your restaurant. And, you know, I just kind of felt like I'm going to make this happen. And
then absolutely,
that's what makes a restaurant business. So you have all these stories year after year of, you know, situations like that you're put in that actually make it, exciting that you're not at a, I'm not at a desk, you know, I'm working with my hands, and I studied art history before and did some fine artwork that I collect the art at the restaurant. So I like to, you know, just a natural feeling being in a kitchen. I think any chef will tell you that they feel more comfortable there than they probably do anywhere else. And then, just a very, it was just an interesting, story.
Well, I have, we have a couple minutes left, and I'm curious to learn, you know, you mentioned that your father passed away a couple months ago. You know, your mom and dad seem to have loved food. What do they think of your illustrious career, and what would he say, you know, about what you've been able to do?
No, it's definitely kind of, you know, proud of, like, you know, it'd be nice if, you know, he was able to, you know,
see it.
Like, you know, the last couple of years wasn't really able to kind of come out and, you know, taste the food. But no, he had a lot of, you know, he was very hardworking himself. So I think he kind of respected, you know, the time and dedication that comes into any job, since he was more of a perfectionist than myself. He was very,
wow,
very, very detailed. So I think he respected, you know, what goes into a nightly service at a restaurant. And, you know, he was, very, you know, both of our families were, you know, cause my wife, Lindsay, her father passed away kind of suddenly, pretty, you know, maybe 2 years before that. So no, they were both an integral part of, you know, like, her father helped us build the original restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Her mother and Lindsay worked on the design. So it was very hands-on. Then we moved and they still helped us out at that point. So, yeah, I think both sides of the family are proud, and they love, you know, they liked, you know, he liked coming out to dine at the restaurant, and was a very, you know, the whole staff kind of knew him and knew both parents, fathers, you know, but Lindsay and my father. So that was very, you know, tough, but, you know, very, you know, they were both, had a lot of, I think, respect, and were proud of the hard work that we put into what we were doing, and that we didn't, you know, you have to fight through some adversity in any business or part of stage in your life. And, you know, they saw what we put into it. So you know, it was great.
Dad's favorite dish at your restaurants?
You know, he was a big fan, of the nettle sfermato that I took back from that trip to Artemino that time, that I tried to, you know, pay respects to by, you know, using like a local olive oil from California, and then like mimicking what he did there. So he was a big fan of that. And then I think one of the last, you know, meals that he, had at the restaurant,
yeah,
back from that original story, when he used to dine out at those restaurants and, when I was left at home, he was a big fan of the steak au poivre. So I think I made that him as kind of a joke. One of, his last meals that he came into the restaurant, which is something that I don't normally serve at the restaurant, but he was with some family friends that traveled out, and they were both big steak au poivre fans. So I think that was the only time that's entered into the dining room,
right,
at Quince. But
yeah,
it did, and it was well received, and they loved it. And so, but definitely, I think the sfermato was like his. He would always ask, like, is that going to be on the menu? Or then he'd come in and I wouldn't make it for him halfway through the meal. And he'd have to ask, am I going to get that? And I'd be like, okay. So, because they would basically kind of come in, eat for 3 days at the restaurant since I was working, and I didn't really
have
like
time.
Say I can step out tonight. But, you know, so they would just eat at the restaurant 3 nights in a row with their friends, and then do different menus for them each night. So I wouldn't repeat myself, and I'd break out some old school, you know, dishes from back in their trips to French restaurants.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was fun.
Wow, that is the ultimate VIP experience. I'm nowhere near a marriage, nor am I anywhere near a child, but I'll I have made a mental note to have a kid who's a great chef so that so that I can be the ultimate VIP. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Michael.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Some social media info, as always, hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW, that's short for word of mouth, show, at Leitishu, LEITIHSU on Twitter. We're at on Facebook as well, facebook.com/word of mouth with Leitishu, all spelled out. You can just search it. And at QuinceSF, that's QUINCESF. Stay in touch with Michael and Quince. That was chef owner Michael Tusk of Quince and Cotonia in San Francisco, 2 Michelin stars, James Beard Award winner. You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leitishu on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leitishu. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.